Shalom, and welcome to In the Beginning. My name is Shmuel Bowman, and I am a Torah scribe.
Let's start with the Negin.
Let's.
You thinking the same one?
Yep.
Okay.
Is with us here today in our study, in our second episode of the Chavruta and Pirkei Avot, continuing your tradition of studying with Zeda, Pirkei Avot. And just like the Nigun we're just saying, you know, the Nigun is the neshama of a song. It transcends everything, it's past words. And also the learning of the Torah passes through generations, time, and even worlds, I believe.
Right.
And I think he's here. And he's continuing his.
Going to continue.
So he would enjoy this whiskey too.
What kind of whiskey is it?
It's a single malt.
Okay.
I don't remember the name.
It's smoky, isn't it?
No? Yeah. Mildly smoky. Yeah.
That could be the incense candle I've got going here. Yeah.
It's hard to know around here.
Got things burning, all sorts of things happening. All right, listen. L'chaim. Tzeda, tadad.
Tzeda.
Amen. Bruch atat na'im ha'flam shekol yebet baro.
Amen.
Bruch atat na'im ha'flam shekol yebet baro. Really good. Good idea.
Yes.
Yeah, and I just want to invite anybody who just may be joining in now, go back to last week. Because we just started last week with Pirkei Avot. We literally did chapter one, verse one. We're now going to go into verse two. But I strongly recommend if you have a chance, just go back, listen to it, and then kind of catch up to where we are now. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. The best time to join last week. The next best time is right now.
Okay. Let's take a look at this. We are now at the second verse. And we'll put, as we did last week, we'll have in the show notes, we'll have the link to what we're looking at today. Okay. And it's coming from Sepharia. We're grateful to them. And we also support them. You should know, it's an automatic monthly donation goes to Sepharia in memory of my dad. But at the time I started doing it, when we started learning, in honor of our learning. So it's a monthly thing. It just comes off automatically right out of my credit card. Done, you know.
I didn't know you did that.
Yeah. So it's just automatic. I just keep it rolling, and it's a nice thing to have. So Safaria is a great app. It's a great program. It's a
free convenient for English speakers who want to study, because you really get all the commentaries and different translations, and it's really good. Like, it's really simplifying Torah learning, I feel.
Right. Okay, so we'll dive in again. It'll be in the show notes, had a link there. Let's take a look. We're at verse 2.
Right, maybe just to give context on Pirkei Avot, just small line on that is that Pirkei Avot is a very, very unique part of the Mishnah. And it's all the highlights of, like, these sages' lives. It's like they just interviewed them and asked, like, what is the one thing you lived and died for? One of the greatest people that lived 2,000 years ago. And this is what they said. So it's really amazing to study each of these gems. It's just amazing.
It's amazing. Okay, verse 2. Let's go into it. It starts as follows. And I'll read in Hebrew. Shimon HaTzadik haya mishaarei Knesset HaGdola hu haya omer al shlosha dvarim haolam omed al haTorah v'al avada v'al gmilut chasadim. And I grew up with actually learning the song for this. There's a song. I learned it maybe later.
I think you have a different
time. I have a different
one. Let's hear your tune.
Mine went like this. Al shlosha devarim. Al shlosha devarim. Al shlosha, shlosha devarim, ha'olam, ha'olam omed. Al ha'torah, v'al avodah, v'al gmilut chasadim. Something like this.
Oh.
let's give a translation for it, though, first, just so that we can, we are in an English-speaking podcast, so.
Yes.
Shimon HaTzadik. First of all, there's a area of Jerusalem named Shimon HaTzadik because he's buried there.
Yeah,
he's actually buried there. Shimon HaTzadik, this is a rabbi from over 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, I think so. And just to give context, that he was worldly, you know, renowned, and Alexander the Great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Alexander the Great.
So he, when he comes to the land of Israel, he comes to Jerusalem. He conquers the land of Israel.
Yeah.
And when he comes into Jerusalem, he sees in front of him Shimon HaTzadik, who is the high priest at the time.
Which is Shimon the Righteous.
And as he walks towards him, Shimon the Righteous, Alexander the Great, the king of Greece.
The whole world, the ancient world,
gets off of his horse to honor him.
Wow.
And everyone just doesn't understand what's going on. And he explains, you have no idea. Every time before I went to war, this man appeared in my dreams and told me I would win.
Wow, that's so interesting. Wow, that's very interesting. And then there's wow. So there must have been some kind of a respectful relationship, perhaps a mutually respectful relationship between Rabbi Shimon and Alexander the Great. Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if that may explain what there's a lot of actual Jewish people named Alexander.
Maybe because
it's like almost like a Jewish name.
Yeah. Russia and America.
Yeah. Everywhere. Okay, so Shimon, he's also called Simon in English, possibly. There is Shimon, or Simon the Righteous, and he was Uaya Mishaarei Knesset Yisrael. Is that like kind of like the remnant of?
So I think it's important to also remember this in context of the previous Mishnah, because we were talking about the tradition line, and we saw that Moses got the Torah from in Mount Sinai and then gave to Yeshua and so on and so forth, and the last person we mentioned by name in the line are the people of the Great Assembly.
And the Knesset HaGadol.
So now we're picking that up where we left off.
So in other words, the chain of continuity of the transmission or the passing of the Torah goes from all the way from Moshe and so on and so forth to the elders or the men or the rabbis of the Knesset HaGadol, the Great Assembly. And now we're picking it up at Shimon HaTzadik, and he's the last of them. He's the last. In other words, it's coming to an end.
This Knesset
is coming to an end,
and he has to pass down how he sees the Torah.
Wow, what an unbelievable responsibility. It's incredible that we're privileged to even get a peek and read into this moment in time when he has to figure out how do I convey the Torah? Who do I pass it on to?
Yeah.
And we're going to look into that.
What are the principles he's going to mention?
So what does he say?
So he says that the world stands on three things. And before we're going to see what these things are, I want to say two comments. First of all, there's definitely something going on with the number three.
Yeah.
I mean, they also said last time there's three things. And from my memory in this, the Kavod, there's a lot of three.
Threes, a lot of threes.
It's kind of like represents balance. You can have far right and far left and the middle. It's kind of like a balance. So, and also the fact that he says the world, we just talked about that, having that mutual connection with Alexander the Great, who is the leader of the world, who we know from all the history books. Shimon HaTzadik is someone who's aware of the world.
He's right.
He's looking through universal eyes.
Right. He's not stuck in a cave somewhere. He's not
right.
Hiding behind his books. He's in the world.
Absolutely. You can learn from this guy nothing till today. And so what's he says? He says there are three things the world stands upon. The Torah, the Avodah. So we'll talk about what that means. But it can mean labor. And Gmilut Chasadim, which is acts of loving kindness.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way of putting it.
Yeah, acts of loving kindness. So okay, so let's take this apart piece by piece. Allah Torah. Well, the Torah. So I mean, that could be study, that could be observance, that could be that. You know, Torah. Another word for Torah is it's a guidebook, isn't it? It's how to live your life.
Yeah, I mean, Torah comes from a Hebrew word which is just like Hora'ah. Or mole, which means teacher. So it's definitely a guiding book.
Right. Exactly. So it's kind of interesting because I just want to jump into us for a second into any interesting comments going on here. Okay. Again, what I'm doing is clicking in Safari. I'm clicking on the words and to the side of the page, commentaries pop up. But we'll leave that for now. But you're welcome to. People are welcome to give that a go, give that a spin. Avodah.
So Avodah is interesting. Avodah, in the sense, it means labor. Yes, in translation, that's what it means. But we're talking about the labor. We're talking about sacrifices that were made in the temple.
Right. That's Avodah.
Now, the question is, what do you do with that today? So it's 2024, and we don't have a temple. And we don't even relate, most of us, to the idea of making sacrifices. It's kind of a lost kind of feeling that people would used to connect with. And these days, it's been preserved through prayer. Avodah Ne'amah means prayer. And I think that also kind of helped us reflect and understand what kind of work is expected from someone who's praying. Because I can talk about myself. Today, I prayed today. And I can't say I was really working when I was doing it. I kind of, switched off to autopilot and then figured out it's been about enough time. I think I read all the words and it's back to reality. It's unfortunate. I think my aspiration for prayer is it should be like labor. I should really believe in it, that this works. I'm now asking from God to help me, help the world. There are people who I care about in Gaza. Gabriel just got back.
Yeah.
We just celebrated.
Had a barbecue dinner party for him tonight.
Yeah.
So glad he came out of Gaza, came out well.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Thank God. Yeah, and hopefully all the soldiers soon will also come back well after defeating our enemies.
Amen.
And we can pray for them. And I believe that prayers have the power to change reality.
So what's the connection? Walk me through how does prayer become what we do in place of the service and the Beit HaMikdash and the temple.
Right. So the way I...
What are the similarities between the two, let's say?
So I think something that's similar between the two, and this is a bit of a Hebrew lesson. The words for sacrifice in Hebrew is kolban. And kolban also comes from the root word of karav, lihitzkarev, to get closer. So by making the sacrifice, you're actually getting closer to God. That's true also just in a general sense. If you make a sacrifice for someone, you're closer to someone. When you give something for someone else, you become closer to them. A lot of people think that if you love someone, you give to them. But many times it works the other way around. When you give to someone, you love them. That's why, I think people love their kids because they give them everything they have. And tefillah also comes from that root word, tofel or patil. Patil techelet. Patil is tzitzit, something you tie, when you tie something. So also here, we're talking about a connection. So I think what's similar between the similarities between sacrifices and prayers is that you're in a relationship with God. That's what's going on. You have a connection.
Wow, amazing, amazing.
You're giving, you're receiving.
And I think also a lot of the prayers, right, that we have in the Jewish prayer book, the Siddur, it's so filled with images that have to do with the Beit HaMikdash, with the temple.
Yeah,
and so like there's so much going on there. Like I don't think you can get away from.
No, it's pretty obvious.
There's no way you can get away from that. Whatever prayer, whether it's the Shemon Esrei, the Amidah, right, the silent standing meditation, or you know, there's just so much going on there that you're constantly being bang, 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 temple, Beit HaMikdash. It's constantly there. You're always, you know, it's been woven into the. Into our prayers.
It's so true. And yet I have to be honest, feeling very honest today. I feel like I don't know what that means. I don't know what that is. Like, yeah, it's in the prayer, but I don't know, like, do I really want a temple? Like, what's going to be in that temple? Like, how do I relate to it? And Gabriel, who just came back from Gaza and he showed us pictures, he was in a school that was converted to Hamas
terror base.
Like many schools and hospitals and everything there. And in the school, there was a picture of Al-Aqsa, the mosque on Temple Mount, and the map of Israel. And he said, this picture...
It's like the Golden Dome?
The Golden Dome. Yeah, the Golden Dome. It's not Al-Aqsa, it's the one next to it.
Okay.
So the Golden Dome, and that's where the temple was. And he says that every house he saw in Gaza had a picture like that. And that's amazing to me.
Yeah.
You know, because they know that they want the temple.
Right.
So when we say the temple, like, what does that mean to us? And we don't have a picture of a temple in our house yet. But what does that mean to you?
Right. No, I hear you. It's hard to work. It's work to make that connection. Here we are, 2,000 years since the destruction of the second temple.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
And we've been far away. We've been traveling a long, long way, you know. Yeah, but I'm reminded of a story told by Rabbi Yehoshua Sivan, lives in Sfat. He did a lot of work. He's done a lot of work with Ethiopian Jews who have come to Israel after being in Ethiopia for like 2,500 years, you know, generation after generation. And he tells a story of Jewish travelers from Europe who made their way from Europe through what was, you know, Israel, what was called the Holy Land, and into Africa, into Ethiopia. And he, this has got to be about 150 years ago or something like this.
Wow.
And he finds this Jewish village, this Jewish community of, you know, in Ethiopia. And again, they've been there for 2,500 years.
Wow.
They were
since
the first temple.
Yeah.
And the story goes is that they turn him, and once they finally believe that he is who he is and he says what he says is true, they say to him, wait a sec, you just traveled through the Holy Land? He says, yes, I did. And then they said, tell us, speak to us about the grandeur and the beauty of the Holy Temple. And he said to them, don't you know what? He says, not only the first temple, but both temples, okay, have been destroyed. This is 150 years ago. He reports that the entire community fell to the ground and put ashes on their head and ripped their clothes in mourning and wept bitterly. And he said, this is what it means. This is what it means to remember the temple almost 2,000 years after its destruction. And the work, I think, you're right, it's hard. And I also find it, you know, it's hard to get into the prayer and you kind of like, sometimes you're just in the mode of just getting through the prayers.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I think the effort is to try and, you know, meditate on and focus on what does it mean to be like one of those Ethiopians? Mm. What does it mean to crash to the ground and say, the temple's been destroyed? Can't be. And at the same time, be able to have the vision of Jeremiah, as he says, Od yishama ba'arei Yehuda, you know, there will be a day, right? Mm. When there will be, what we hear in the hills of Judea, where we live right now. the sounds of the bride and the groom and the children laughing in the streets. And we're getting there.
We're getting there.
We're hearing that now. Yes, those days are coming. So it's absolutely amazing. So how do we, it's the work. I'm not saying I know have the answer, but it's worth it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's Avodah. Let's get to the third one. Al Gemilut Chasadim.
Yeah.
What do you say? Acts of
loving kindness.
Loving kindness.
Yes. Gemilut Chasadim. That's something that builds the world. And I love that because there is a natural and human instinct to not give tzedakah, to not give in general. And, you know, that just makes sense. If you're giving, you're going to have less. How are you ever going to get rich if you keep giving all your money away? And he says it's exactly the other way around. They don't say exactly money. It's sometimes things you do with your actions. It could be giving your time. It could be a lot of giving. But it's like it's not an intuitive thing to do. And yet he says, this is one of the things that keeps the world going. I think it's really
great. Right. And I think that such a huge part of that is the word act. Mm. Acts of loving kindness.
Right.
And this is extremely, extremely important, I think, a difference that we see coming from the Jewish tradition, that it's not that kindness isn't thinking kindness. Mm. And it's not hoping kindness. Okay. It's doing. And I'm struck by the fact that it's been, can I say something controversial?
Go for it. Our podcast.
Wow. I wrestle with this because I'm very, very attracted to, I mean, you know this, I'm very attracted to Eastern philosophy.
Yeah, sure.
Trying to reconcile, you know, as a lot of people have done, where does Judaism and Eastern thinking kind of like, you know, intersect?
Sure.
And where do we not? And so I'm very interested in this. It's interesting that a lot of Jews who did not have, I would say the right rabbis, let's say, went off and were spiritual seekers, especially in the 60s. Especially in the 60s and the 70s and things like that. And even today, and are looking for, and they're not looking in their own backyard, so to speak. And they look far, far away. They look, and I can't blame them. It's not accessible. I can't blame them. You know, clearly there was no Beit Chabad where they lived.
Right.
And
everyone's fortunate to grow up in a home like me.
Oh, okay.
To have the spiritual vibe. And sometimes it's not like
that. Right. And so they go searching. So, you know, I do listen. So I know that, for example, and she means well, and I'm not criticizing her, but Sharon Salzberg, who some of our listeners may know, a Jewish woman from, I want to say from New York, you know, someone who was, you know, a teenager or young adult anyways in the 60s. Very much a spiritual seeker, and I guess she didn't really grow up with that or have that accessible. And she went searching to the East. She went to India, and you know, wound up discovering Buddhism and all that stuff. Very, very, you know, understandable. And she practices what's called loving kindness.
Okay,
loving kindness, except without the word acts of
loving kindness.
And her entire philosophy is to meditate, okay? Meditate on acts of loving kindness, which means meditate on loving kindness. It means that your meditation should be about sending this energy, okay, first to yourself, to love yourself, to be kind to yourself, to wish yourself peace, to wish yourself a life of ease, to wish yourself good health, and all that kind of stuff. And then to direct it to people that you like, and then people that you don't really care that much about, and then ultimately directed to people that you actually can't stand. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting idea. And a lot of people have really gravitated to this as like, wow, this is an amazing, amazing meditation and amazing idea in Buddhist philosophy. And a lot of people really gravitate to it. But one of the things that really, what's the word I want to use, disturbs me, is that ultimately it's thought. I'm going to think about loving kindness. I'm going to think about it for myself, and I'm going to start thinking about it for us. There's no actual act involved. Mm-hmm. The entire practice, if you will, is all in the mind. And so nobody actually receives anything.
Wow.
Yeah. Nobody actually receives any acts, any loving kindness.
That doesn't sound very like selfless. I mean, you feel good with yourself.
You feel amazing.
No one got anything out of
it. No. Yeah, exactly. It's completely about you, not the person, feeling, wow, did I ever feel great about that? I just sent wishes to somebody I can't stand that they should have a life of ease and good health.
Yeah. I mean, there's some value to it, but it can't end there.
I guess that's it. It's a good start.
Yeah, it's a great start.
It's a great start.
That led to doing something.
Yeah, I want to give credit to to Sharon and to that entire philosophy. And it's a great start, but it's nowhere near like finished. It's nowhere near the goal. The goal here, as we see from Rabbi Shimon, is about the act of loving kindness. Do something to show that. Act to show that loving kindness, to make the life of others better, including, by the way, those who you don't like, as well as those who you do like.
Absolutely.
And yourself and your family and the world. And so I think for me, the operative word has to do with acting of loving kindness.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think it's fascinating that he's talking about three things that are all about giving. This Torah, which is passing it on, the Holah, passing it on to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And Avodah, which we said is work you're putting in. Because sometimes you could think prayers are just like to receive things, but the prayer is called Avodah. It's
right.
To work.
Right.
And the last one, as you're saying, the acts of loving kindness.
Acts of loving kindness.
You gotta do.
But amazing. Think about that. These three things. I mean, I'm sure if he was pressed, it had to whittle it down to three.
Yeah.
The top three. I'm sure it would have not been difficult for him to come up with 10.
Right.
Or more. You come up with your checklist. These are the things that the world stands upon.
Right.
The world is built on. And he's coming up with three. But going back to the idea of standing.
Mm.
So it occurs to me that if you're not standing, so the opposite of standing isn't sitting.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite of standing is falling.
Well, say more.
Right? So it doesn't say the world sits on three things. That's not what, it's standing and falling. Those are the two options. Okay. There's no neutral.
Either you're
either standing, you're either upright or you're on the ground.
So true.
Those are the two options.
So true. That's how the world works.
And it's interesting that you need three things. You need something, right? If you're going to support something, it's going to require three things.
Yeah,
I think so.
I think so too. And I think we can really divide this again. We said like right, left, and center. And I think when you look at the Torah, we talked about the his teachers, the Sheikh Knesset HaGdolah, right? So they said three things. You have to be balanced in your law and have a lot of students, so you have a lot of ideas, and make a fence around the Torah. Everything about the Torah screams balance. That's what we said also last time. If someone is being radical in the name of Torah, you should double check himself.
Mm-hmm.
And something out of the Torah which is so balanced. So that's the center. And the Avodah is, I think it's the left. I think this is it's hard work. It's about having boundaries and putting in the work. And doing it three times a day, even if you don't feel like it.
Right.
Something that is very... You got to be tough. It's not easy.
And you have to show up.
You have to show face. Otherwise, and then Gvirut Chasadim, the acts of loving kindness, is all about giving. It's being this open kind of energy, like opening up your heart.
Right. Opening your heart
and doing. And also, that reminds me of something. He's talking about like the three elements that can really keep this world standing, as you're saying, keep it forward. And I don't see human rights here. I don't see human rights.
Mm.
And there's something very important. If we're going controversial route today, so I might as well say it.
Okay.
I don't believe in human rights.
Okay.
I don't. I think it's a good way to raise a selfish world that doesn't care about anybody else. And when their rights are hurt, there's always some rights going to get hurt, and you have to balance what's not getting hurt. And I'm saying this as a law student. So
yeah.
I don't agree with human rights. I think there needs to be human duties. People need to do things for society and for each other. And that way, of course, all the rights will be taken care of. So if everyone feels that commitment to do acts of loving kindness, there won't be any poor people in the world.
Wow. That's amazing. That is amazing. By doing acts of loving kindness, there will be no need to actually advocate for human rights because we're already acting
on doing it.
Wow. Okay. This has been good.
Yes.
Thank you so much. All right. We'll pick it up next week.
All right. See you next week.
Please join me every week for new ideas, and let's share these secrets together. Shalom. I'm Shmuel Bowman.